friend, we have changed positions. You're in the States, I'm in Europe, but I'm not going to give the report. I still need you to give us the update.
Well, I'm glad to always be there and to update. I wish I could be with you right now.
I'm sure you do, and I'm sure they would love it if you could come and teach them sometime here. Rob, we need to talk about what is going on. A lot of things happening. Now, from my vantage point, I'm picking up some things. Probably you as well are able to do that. Before I get, though, really into all of the activities of the European Union, I talked earlier with Bob McGinnis about the Iraqi elections. Now, these are going to be key for the stability of Iraq and, of course, they rebuilding their war-torn nation. At the same time that the elections are getting ready to happen, they happen tomorrow over in Iraq, there has been a conversation going on and, in fact, somewhat of a drilling of the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Prime Minister Brown. He has been answering the questions, actually justifying the fact that Great Britain was involved with the United States in the Iraqi war. And I'm talking about, of course, what's been happening since the early 2000s. And I'm wondering, what's the heartbeat of all of the European Union? I know that Great Britain is a key player in the European Union. I know Brown was key. And in fact, I know we have even talked about former Prime Minister of Great Britain, Tony Blair, possibly heading up the European Union at some point in history. But he was the one that really gave the approval to move ahead. Brown was, I think they call him something like the Secretary of Treasury, or you can tell me what the exact title is, but he was putting the funding forth. Why are they talking about this right now, and why are they looking back in retrospect when Iraq needs to be moving forward, and what does this play into the entire philosophy of the European Union as it relates to Iraq and other nations like that?
Well, you need to understand, Britain is still very suffering right now with the war in Afghanistan and with losses there. And the British people don't like war. They certainly had it in their backyard, and so they get very uncomfortable with the whole subject. What has happened has been really, as part of the run-up to the British elections that are coming, is a real kind of reassessment. Should they have ever been in Iraq? Because they sort of see Iraq has led to Afghanistan, and so they're all combining. What is interesting to watch is that both Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, who was treasurer back then, have been examined, if you will, and discussed what was their role in trying to relive, was it the right thing to do? And the contrary to the general opinion throughout the EU, both Tony Blair and now Gordon Brown have supported, said we did the right thing. I think what he's trying to appeal to is that in the United Kingdom, this is much more true in the UK than rest of Europe, British people care about other people, very much so. And what they're stressing is they did what was right for the people of Iraq. And I think what they're trying to do is minimize the effect in the next election, the negative views about war in Afghanistan, against the Labour Party. So it's really sort of internal politics they're dealing with. But at the same time, as often as I may criticize former Prime Minister Blair and current Prime Minister Brown, these men are sticking to what they felt was the right thing to do. And so there's a certain nobility that's come out of them in this issue. And they recognize it's not popular, but they're trying to help the whole view about how do you deal with Iraq, Afghanistan, and other trouble spots of the Middle East. So quite an interesting thing to be watching. But remember, the whole goal of the EU and the whole European view is peace and prosperity, and therefore war is a very is a bad subject to be involved with.
Rob, remind me, and I can't remember right now, what was it like back then? I mean, when they were getting ready to go into war, Great Britain said they would go. Tony Blair was the prime minister then. What about the European Union? Were they in favor of that, or were they holding back as well then?
It boiled down to the individual states. Some of them were very supportive at the time, believed the information they were given, and believed the need to do what was right, and they did it. But always remember, the contribution military-wise is always a small percent from Europe, in terms of the NATO forces or whoever is involved. And so it really strikes at home to them. But it depended on the country. The Brits were behind it because their leaders convinced them it was the right thing to do. It's really hindsight and the media that has gotten the people to start turning, even during the war, to turn against it. And now, of course, it's considered a very unpopular decision. So I think the media has influenced the views almost more than anything.
Of course, this plays into the foreign policy debate that is going on right now between the Commission, the European Commission, and the member states. They're vying to see who's going to have the control of the diplomatic service. And with the new chief of the foreign policy for the European Union, Catherine Ashton, she's really right in the middle, isn't she? She's number two to Barroso, who is the head of the Commission, but yet she is the leader and the chief of foreign policy for the member states.
That's right. She really is in the middle right now. She is a member of the Commission. President Barroso is that, but she's also part of the Council. And right now what we're seeing is the balance of power being created. Nobody knows exactly how the diplomatic corps is to fit into the EU. The treaty established it, but has not defined not only the full duties, but who really guides. And so what you have is the battle between the states or individual countries in the EU and the Commission, which is a separate authority governing the EU. So it's a bit like way back in the United States' early days, trying to decide, is there states' rights? Is there a federal government? Is a strong federal government, strong states' rights? That's the same issue and battle, if you will, that's going on in the EU, and it's all over the diplomatic corps. What we need to note carefully is it not as a question, do we have a single diplomatic corps ultimately that represents the EU in all world affairs? That isn't even a question. That isn't even being debated. It's merely who really controls that, or who controls, in this case, Catherine Ashton or her successors. And the debate is, do the states control it, or does the authority over the whole EU? And we need to watch this. As it's resolved, I think we're going to see the future of the EU, and my personal opinion is you're going to see that the authority or the commission headed by right now Barroso will be the power, and the states will lose more and more sovereignty. And I think that's the heart of this issue, is the states recognize if they give up their embassies, which they will do, they are giving up some sovereignty, and if they can't control the Secretary of the Foreign Affairs, then they've lost a lot of their sovereignty.
Let me remind all of those that are eavesdropping on this conversation. We talk about these political activities, especially with Dr. Rob Congdon as it relates to the European Union, because I do believe, and does Rob as well believe, that the European Union is at least the infrastructure for the revived Roman Empire that is going to come into power, according to the book of Daniel, chapter 7, and also in Revelation 13 and 17. We have to understand the political activities to see how the stage is being set for these things to happen. Now, as I remind our listeners of that, Rob, then I've got to come back to you for a current event that we need to talk about. Brussels setting out a new economic strategy for the European Union. Economics will play a key role in the end times. What's going on there in Brussels?
Well, absolutely true. What's happening in Brussels is they're establishing the strategy, is their term, for the future, for the people of the EU. How many are to be working? How many need to go to schools, universities? They're getting involved in all aspects of life in this longer-range plan. And just as you said, politics are interesting. They're fun to talk about sometimes. But the bottom line is what we see in the EU is proving to us that the things we read in our scriptures could actually start happening in our lifetime. They're feasible today. And if we note what this new economic strategy is, it reflects Jean Monnet, who's the true founder of the EU's concept, that economically is how you conquer the world. This plan, if followed through, establishes that this commission, this higher authority in the EU, can start dictating down to the very individual lives of its citizens, and with no regard to nationalities. And that fits very well the description that Daniel has given to us of the coming world empire. It will want to control people economically. It will want to control what they can do, when they can go to school, what jobs they can have. This is very symbolic of that same concept in their current economic strategy.
Well, and I've got to ask you about the article I sent along to you last week, where the head of the IMF, International Monetary Fund, is now calling for a new reserve currency. This is making a move towards that one world currency, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Again, in his article, he didn't say, should we have one? It's not a question of should we do it. It's a question of when. And I think, as we've discussed many times, the economic policies of these countries are crucial. And a single global currency is a requirement if you're really going to control things. And interestingly enough, it fits very closely to the scenario of the tribulation time economics. So therefore, there's going to be a bridge from where we are today to what it would be like in the tribulation. And I'm not going to be there. You're not going to be there. Those who know Christ won't be there. But that bridge is, how do you get there? And it's like we're seeing signs. Here's the bridge. It's pointing to it. And that's the single currency.
Well, what is so interesting to me, the IMF making this decision, they have to have a new reserve currency, a one world currency of some type. We're in a world economic crisis. The reason for Brussels setting forth this new economic strategy for the European Union, everybody's concerned about the economics of the world. How better to have the stage set for every single person on the earth, according to Revelation chapter 13, verses 16 and 17, taking some type of identification mark on the forehead or the back of the hand to be able to buy or sell, and having an economic world power located in Babylon, which the Bible calls for. I mean, this seemingly is setting the stage for all of those scenarios to come to pass.
That's right. The only thing we don't know is how far we are on that bridge toward the tribulation economics, but absolutely. And I've said it many times, I continue to say, notice they constantly stress, we've got to do something now, we can't delay. And that's why I've contended that the easiest step is to take a currency that is used extensively in many countries of the world, and one that is potentially stronger, and that's the euro. And so many economic advisors are saying that same thing. And so what we're seeing is, yes, the bridge, it's in reality, in our view, it seemingly is being built or is built, and we could well be on it now. But it's all leading to exactly what we read in the scriptures.
Dr. Rob Congdon, our special broadcast partner, who helps us look at the European Union, the activities of it, in light of biblical prophecy. Rob, always a joy to have you. Thank you, my dear friend. Appreciate you being with us, and maybe next time we can be together when we're in Europe.
That would be exciting, wouldn't it? Have a good week there.